everybody. This is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast, where we are deep into Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger's ways of investing in investments.
That's my new favorite.
We don't
investing
speculate.
Investing in investments.
Right on. So I said that because often we started, we're talking about stocks, which of course we are, but there's all sorts of good investments out there. And I was fascinated in one of Munger's or Buffett's letters. I think I hate it when I'm going to tell you guys I read a letter and I don't know which one it was.
You know, I do the same thing though. It's so hard to remember which one. They all run together when you're reading them together, yep. Of course. And yep. They're only called by their year. So it's like impossible to remember.
Yep.
So give us the vague, like, what's the 5-year range?
There you go. Early 80s. You know, we were talking about where bonds were going crazy. We were talking about this not too long ago. And bonds were really high. And so that's why Buffett was open into buying bonds. And then, you know, also open to doing merger acquisition kinds of arbitrage, which we chatted about. And long-term stocks, right? And now I don't even have a clue why I got onto that. What were we talking about? I don't know. Why we call it investments. Because there's a lot of ways you can go at this. Over the years, Warren has widened the category substantially, right? To include real estate, to include farms, to include options done a certain kind of way, to include, just about anything you could put money into would qualify as an investment if you, particularly if you see that that thing will produce cash flow. And I think that's the one major, I know that he's done some commodity stuff in the past, but in general, he doesn't like gold because it doesn't produce cash.
Right? Yeah.
Would rather have the gold mining company.
Yeah, definitely.
So is that the only real major category that he might not want to be in? The rest of the world is full of investments, all kinds of investments. And Charlie basically says, we like shooting fish in a barrel. And the other way he says it is, you got to fish where the fish are. And that would make sense. So that's kind of a question right now, right? Because the market is just rocketing off into the sky blue yonder. The Wilshire GDP, which we've talked about, this ratio of the price of the market versus, you know, the actual revenue of what's going on in the whole country, is obscenely high. It's at 216% now. And we were lamenting it when it was at 120.
Yeah, totally.
So it's almost double where we were feeling like, ooh, this is getting scary. Being propped up by a Federal Reserve that is adamantly they're adamant in their desire to just not raise interest rates and to continue to rock and roll here with this economy until they see inflation through their lens. And since we're having a Federal Reserve meeting today, which is going to be a couple weeks before, about 2 weeks before we post this broadcast, the Federal Reserve is having a meeting at 2:00. And I'm just reading Barron's analysis of where they think it's going to go. And they're basically saying, you know, really the Federal Reserve is walking a very, very thin line here in terms of their rhetoric, in terms of what they're actually doing. You know, they're saying, no, everything's fine. And we're not going to raise interest rates till after 2023, which is right, two and three quarters years from now, right? 21, 22. That's almost 3 years from now. Not going to raise interest rates. That's breathtaking.
Yeah, I think the line they're walking is confidence in this economy, which is massively hit by all the lockdowns across the world and people losing their jobs at such high rates. Like the real economy is struggling and they don't want to add to that in housing prices or a crash in the stock market.
And you just look at these assets, stocks and housing, and here in the United States, I don't know how it's going in Zurich, but here in the United States, it is on fire. I mean, housing? Are you kidding me? I mean, people are jumping at the first chance to buy a house. It's crazy. I mean, it's here in rural Georgia, it's happening like that.
Yeah, I know. It's yeah.
I mean,
it is like that here as well.
Your sister and her husband want to buy a house, and the market that they're looking in, they're afraid they won't be able to do it. Why? You might ask. Not because they don't have great credit, not because they can't get a loan. No, none of those. It's because people are buying them all cash. No yeah. escrow, no wait, just here's the money. Now, I want to close
in a week. It's been like that, though, for years. Maybe not in Georgia. But in Denver. In Denver, it has been like that for years. Absolutely. Anybody buying with a mortgage was at a huge disadvantage to all the people who were coming That's in with all crazy. Cash.
I didn't know that. Honestly, last time I really paid any attention to Denver real estate, and you're talking maybe Boulder, but
no, I'm talking Boulder too. And Denver.
Okay, last time I paid serious attention, was your uncle was trying to sell two houses down in Greenwood Village, and he couldn't sell them to save his life. They just sat there for months and months and months and months.
I know. Right?
So all of you who have never experienced that side of real estate. It will come back that way, and you know, be prepared.
But yeah, the housing market's going nuts everywhere, really.
Right, housing.
I know we're looking at buying a vacation house, and it's, you know, it's like get in now because everybody wants a vacation house.
Unbelievable.
All of us going through this experience where truly, a year ago, I was having the thought, why do we even bother to like have an apartment the size of our apartment when neither of us are ever home? Like, what is the point? We just need like a studio somewhere. And now I'm like, oh, it turns out we need a mansion because all we do is stay home. And
obviously that was pre-COVID, that experience.
That's what I'm saying. And I think everyone is going through that exact experience of like, we used to never, ever be home. And it really didn't matter so much how much space you had. And now it's like the exact opposite. And I think that's really fueling this change where people combined with remote working being suddenly accepted by companies and even encouraged. So people are starting to be able to move
out of the city.
That's what I'm saying. So people are starting to be able to move out of, for example, one of the absolute worst housing places on the face of the earth, San Francisco, most expensive housing market, not the most expensive in the world, but definitely up there. And people are realizing that they, just for an example, can leave San Francisco, go live in Idaho and have a nice big house and still make San Francisco money. Like this is a huge change, and it's
going to accelerate
for the better.
Yeah, it'll accelerate because we haven't even gotten to where these rural communities, the really little ones, like the one we're in, which is, we're not that far. We're you know, 40 minutes south of the biggest airport in the world, so we're not in the middle of nowhere. But this is a rural community. I mean, you know, it's horsey. And this community is getting faster and faster internet, faster and faster and faster. And when that starts going all the way out into southern Georgia, all the way out into Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, all through these deeply rural communities, you are going to see this diaspora out of the cities continue. I think people want to raise their kids where it's in less expensive. I mean, the kind of lifestyle you can have with city housing money out in rural counties. Oh my gosh. You can live in a wonderful, beautiful house. You can be on acreage. You can have animals. You know, and you can do all the things. Not that everybody wants that.
And I think what's really interesting, like for me watching that, is looking at data companies, internet companies, what's the infrastructure in 20 years going to look like? That's what I find super interesting to be thinking about. And the companies that are doing it right now and setting it up. Like, it's...
Who's going to win there?
It's going to be the future utility companies, essentially, of our world.
Right.
They may even become utility companies, which would be very interesting.
And think, I was just reading deeper into a nuclear power energy company, and their argument at their quarterly report. And by the way, just as we're talking about this stuff, just the process of investing, basically says, I hope you're interested in a lot of different things and you can listen in on or read the transcript of the quarterly reports and the annual reports from these companies. And so, you know,
do you prefer to listen or read or both at the same time?
I prefer by far to read. Hmm. By far. It's so much faster.
It's way faster. Yeah. It's way, way faster.
I prefer through all the BS that everybody always says when they're trying to get a thought out the door, right? It's like, you skip all that. Get down to
what
they're
saying. I
feel
like I have to listen in order to like get a sense of what they're saying.
Oh, I do listen when I'm getting serious.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I want to get a
feeling.
But I find
it most helpful to do both. Read it while I'm listening, because then I also like force myself to pay attention. Where do you get your transcripts?
Mostly Seeking Alpha. They just got them right there really quickly.
Yeah.
It's quicker and deeper than most companies. And they put them on the company website too, usually. Unless they really don't want you to hear it.
Some of them do.
I know. If they don't want you to notice, then they don't. But
I think Rev.com is doing them for free, and I've been using those a little bit.
Oh, that's cool. By the way, big shout out to Rev.com. I mean, they are fantastic.
Yeah.
What they do is we send them audio and they get it back within hours. You know, with very cheap. A transcript comes back. So here's what I was going
to
say.
I always have to ask the process questions.
Well, this is a process and part of the practice, right? Is that you read this stuff and all of a sudden it dawns on you that these guys are talking about something you didn't think about that is going to be a huge impact on the future, right? So
Wait a second. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about in general, reading different kinds of companies, quarterly reports may pop ideas into your head that you would have never had.
Yes.
Okay. But in this specific, it's you're reading a nuclear power company, right? So they have an axe to grind. They're all about nuclear power.
Yes.
All right. So knowing that, But they present, but what they do is, what's real beautiful about capitalism and a free market is that you're going to get opinions from people who have a reason to give you that opinion. And they're going to try to back it up with as much data as they can. So you'll believe them, right? So, I mean, sometimes they're lying, but often they're telling the truth and their truth is maybe politically incorrect. Okay. So here's an example of that.
Okay.
These guys laid out the actual data for how much oil and gas and coal is required to produce energy. How much in the United States? What would you guess at this point in time?
I couldn't even begin to.
80%.
No clue. Wait a second. I thought you were. Okay, wait. 80% of what?
80% of the energy being produced in the U.S. is driven by oil, gas, and coal.
Oh, okay. I thought you were setting it up differently.
No.
So what you're saying is what percentage of the overall energy?
Grid. Yeah, the whole energy grid.
Okay.
What percent is driven by pollutants and stuff that runs out?
So you're
out.
Saying the other options are electricity and nuclear.
No, this is electricity.
What are you talking about?
Oil and gas produces electricity. They have generators driven by oil, diesel, gas, natural gas.
Yeah.
Right? They drive turbines with it, and that produces energy. Generators.
Okay. All right.
Right?
Okay.
So for example, we just got hit by lightning about an hour ago here at the house, and it snapped off the power, and we have a generator that is based on propane. Mm-hmm. And it immediately kicks in when power goes out here because we're out in the sticks. And that generator is generating power, electricity.
Yes, understood. Right?
So electricity isn't a source of electricity. Electricity's got to come from someplace.
Okay.
Right on. So let's move on while you absorb this lesson of life.
To my concept of the energy grid.
Right.
So if oil and gas and coal are 80%...
of what according to electricity,
a company that competes against oil and gas and coal.
Yes. And so you might argue the data, but basically it's a large amount of the energy grid is oil, gas, and coal.
Okay.
And then they go to the next step, which is, and California is going to be oil, gas, coal free by 2050. Or Europe is going to be oil, gas, coal free by XYZ, or India is, or China is, right? So
these governments— What do you mean, they're just saying that?
No, they're not just saying that. The governments, and they point out that Joe Biden just went and got back into the Paris Accords for climate change. In other words, there's this enormous social event going on to reduce as rapidly as possible the source of energy from pollutants, oil, gas, and coal.
Sure.
Everybody's aware of this. All right. So these guys are making that their case. They're going, oh, and by the way, it's impossible. You can't do it given the energy sources that exist in the world today, meaning solar, wind, water, right? You can't come close to at any price, you can't come close to reducing the footprint of oil, gas, and coal to any kind of level that they want to. Any kind of level that these are demands that this will happen.
Okay. I doubt that, but
we
can move on.
Without nuclear power. Okay. You have to have nuclear power. And then they proceeded, which is, of course, a problem. If you know, there's a big split in the green movement between those that think nuclear power is a pollutant and those who don't.
Definitely. Right?
So they point out that China has gone just since Fukushima, where, you know, Germany said no more nuclear power. China has doubled the number of reactors that they have brought online.
Hmm.
So they not just built them, they're online now. And will double again, and will double again. Their estimate is that China needs about 200 of these things in order to produce enough power to meet the expectation that they're going to be disconnected from coal and oil and gas.
So what did all of that add up for you?
What it added up for me is that I should be... It sort of triggered when we were talking about, you know, the future kinds of companies are going to do well as we go toward, let's say, a massive infrastructure change in rural America to bring internet out to rural America. What companies will be doing that?
Hmm.
I thought the same thing exactly. I just read about this. Wow. What if these guys are right and they are insisting they are 100% right? It's not even a close call that you can't do it without nuclear power and that...
Hmm.
Their estimate is that the Biden administration is going to be warmer toward nuclear power now as a result of the Paris Accords. So
basically the takeaway, that's all from a company that's talking itself up, right? So that's
right.
Obvious. But the really interesting takeaway, I think, is what you're saying, that the future of energy is going to be different. And maybe it's nuclear. Maybe this nuclear company is right about itself, or maybe they're not. Maybe it's something else. But
maybe something else comes out of the woodwork.
Definitely,
right?
the movement is towards less of those fossil fuels, and that's certainly right. What the Paris Accords require.
I mean,
so
maybe they
actually
figure
not really
out
require.
What is it?
It's hydrogen? Actually a voluntary choice, but that's
right. Separate. So maybe they figure out a way to do nuclear fusion instead of fission, or whichever way it is. One of those is. Not yet a perfected thing,
yeah.
And the other one is, and one's
there's some really interesting stuff around nuclear, and I swear I am blanking on the details of this, so don't listen to me, but I swear there's some article I read about our favorite guy Elon Musk or some similar styled billionaire person working on nuclear in a very making safe nuclear, quote unquote. So that there's no Fukushima-style disaster.
Yeah.
God, where did I get that from? It was super interesting. Oh, well. Maybe I'll figure it out and I'll email it out to everybody on my email list. Join my email list at danielletown.com. How about that?
On that point, I just Googled this little quick question. And basically, Musk did go on Twitter and said, we have a giant fusion reactor in the sky that works with no maintenance.
Okay, that is not what I was thinking of. Are you kidding?
In other words, the sun. But this is not to say Elon's
that
not pitching his book as well.
100% not what I was thinking of.
I mean, Elon owns, right? Now Tesla owns Solar City, is it? Solar something. Tesla owns them, and they're going to, by the way, I don't know if you've seen this, but man, they're putting these architectural tiles on roofs now. I thought this was still something in the future, but they're putting architectural tiles on roofs that are solar panels, and they look like roof tiles. They don't look anything like
solar panels. Oh, you mean like solar panels that look really nice, basically?
Yes. and do the job and will never go bad kind of a thing.
Well, that sounds great.
I know, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they're beautiful. They have all sorts of architectural quality to them. And yet, you know, they'll light up your house and part of your city. Which
I mean,
is,
I'm not sure anybody really had a problem with the way solar panels look. Maybe some people do.
Oh, yeah.
They're not the prettiest.
That's a thing.
I think it's more the cost.
Well, yeah, we're not talking cost here. I mean, the repayment. But, of course, you have the argument would be you have to calculate in the, like, what is the cost of having the Earth die?
Of course.
Danielle just fell out of her chair laughing at me.
That is fine. The cost. That's right.
Fine. Fine. Laugh
Dad,
at your
I think
father.
That I'm not laughing at you. I think it's brilliant. I think that you should quit everything you're doing and go to work for Solar City and tell them you'll be their best salesman that they've ever had.
Just, so fascinating.
Just
oh
guilt
my gosh.
People. Do you want these for $20,000 or do you want the Earth to die? And they'll be like,
you know, that's a. I think that was the pitch made by that girl at the UN, I think, pretty much. That 16-year-old
oh,
came out. Greta, yeah, that was her pitch right there.
That is
very
basically
powerful.
Her pitch. You're right.
Very powerful pitch.
We should
very
all
emotional.
Row ourselves across the ocean and try to make the Earth not die.
I know. We should.
That's it.
And, yeah, and so I guess basically the point is.
And you know what? Nobody disagrees with that. Nobody's like, wait a second. I am excited for the Earth to die. I'm going to go live on Mars in Elon Musk's Mars community, so I'm good. Well,
before
maybe Elon Musk feels like that.
Before you get too thrilled about going to live on Mars, I recommend you look at the pictures of Mars that have come back from
Oh, I haven't
rovers.
Seen them.
Oh, it's bleak out there. There and there's it's like
what were
you know
you
if you
expecting?
Were to go into well I don't know if you go to Saudi Arabia you know you go to Wadi Rum you're looking at one of the most incredible landscapes on the earth or if you go
That's
to the edge
true.
Of the Grand Canyon it's just spectacular and as the light changes it's just like this unbelievable I hope that somebody can clue me into that part of what they're sending back from Mars because I haven't seen it yet. What I've seen is unrelenting, boring desert. That's what it looks like to me. Oh,
Dad,
and mud patches.
There's
where
mud
clearly
on Mars?
Water, clearly
oh, wow.
Water dried out. I mean, you look at that. Have you ever been in the
oh,
desert?
Oh, there was mud on Mars. Okay, got yeah. it. I was like, I that mean, sounds really important.
Yeah. I think they're starting to find that there was water there.
Right, have you seen The Martian, Dad, the movie?
I have.
That That's what
good.
Mars does it look like Mars in the movie?
Well, I said I have. I watched a little bit of Matt Damon and then I sort of got bored because I read the book and it was really good.
Oh, the book is so
yeah,
also
it's hard to make a movie as good as
huge
that.
Recommendation. The audiobook is so good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, even if you've read the book, the audiobook is really, really good. Also, sadly, the follow-up book, Artemis, not good.
Not good. Not good.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. Okay. Well, but while we're on audiobooks, just real quickly.
Yeah.
I am rereading via audiobook The Seven Pillars of Wisdom.
Oh.
Which is probably why the word Wadi Rum popped into my head.
I was wondering where that came from.
Which was a major part of the whole guerrilla war that Lawrence, right? T.E. Lawrence created, Lawrence of Arabia, Il Lawrence. Anyway, phenomenal, incredible adventure followed by, and one of the most incredible philosophical books about life and about, you know, wow. I mean, I just so
And it's good as an audiobook.
Great as an audiobook. It's read by Lawrence.
No. What?
Yes. I think.
How'd that happen?
Maybe I can't back that up. But whoever read it is such a bad reader that I thought it has to be Lawrence.
So it's a great audiobook, but not
You really
read
have
well.
To get used to listening to this person's voice. This guy is like, oh, it's got to be Lawrence. And they did have recordings in 1930s when, you know, so they could well have read it out.
Okay. To Somebody wrap up knows. Our futurist discussion, How do you, in your mind, as an investor who focuses on real numbers, real pricing, real valuation, real what's the management doing, everything's very like concrete. How do you, as an investor, think about these big, far-off questions of what's our world going to look like in 20 years? Not even getting to the point of like which company is going to win the internet data, whatever. But like, how much do you think about that stuff?
Well, I think about it in just in this context, and that is if you had known that you should invest in IBM in the 1950s, for example, how would you have done compared to, say, buying an old staid railroad stock, right? Railroads were getting dumped and the future of commerce was air travel and air freight. And IBM was clearly the future. They were making a computer and it was amazing. And if you'd bought IBM versus railroads, and you would have crushed it with the railroads, you would have crushed the IBM returns. And that's just the nature of speculation. And the market is loaded with speculators who want to bet on the future. And so, and all they remember, of course, is their winners, just like gamblers in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. You know, I put my money into Amazon. I, Tim Ferriss, God bless him, is my favorite guy out there for podcasts and stuff. And I love the guy. And all you hear are, you know, you're going to hear the winners. And if you invest in enough stuff as an angel investor, as Tim has, you're going to have some winners. And then you can brag about those. But overall, good luck, because all those losers can bring you down. And you just don't know. Also, I'd add that Warren Buffett was introduced to Jeff Bezos back in the middle 90s. Bezos is a brilliant guy. We've talked about this before. He's not just some guy in a garage in Seattle, right? He was in wherever Renaissance is hanging out. I forget, it's Connecticut, I think. He was a Renaissance guy. He was one of these 300 rocket scientists who were being recruited because of their enormous math and science skills and genius IQs to apply those to trading. And Renaissance are a bunch of guys who compounded money at 75% a year for 20 years. Mm. I mean, just seriously, the best investors in the world. And Bezos asked one of the guys that started the company, if they've been looking at this idea of books online and could, you know, and he thought, you know what, I think I can really make something out of this. Do you guys mind if I run with this? And the owners basically said, hey, go for it. And he said, what part of the ownership of this do you want? And they said, none of it. You just go and do it. And so Bezos drove across the United States and figured out how he would build Amazon.
And Buffett knew about him.
Buffett met him in Seattle. Buffett looked at what he was doing. Buffett looked at what the other 30 guys were doing and couldn't pick Bezos as a sure winner. The discipline of this style of investing is to get as close to certainty as we can get. And you know when you're not close. I mean, right? You know when it could be this or it could be that. You know you're making a bet. And we don't like to make bets. We like sure things, you know?
And so what I'm saying is that you're focused on the actual companies and you really don't think that much about what's going to happen generally in the future.
Huh? No, I don't think you can think about what's going to happen to this company apart from what you think is going to happen in the future generally, right? I mean, you have to understand that there are broad trends going on for sure, because you're effectively looking out farther than, I mean, most investors, most people call themselves investors are thinking in 90-day chunks, okay?
Yeah.
But if you're looking out and saying, okay, in 10 years, this is going to be bigger than it is today, then certainly you have to be looking at the moat challenges, that what's coming up against this moat. So if you're interested in oil and gas, are you thinking these are really a bargain, or are you thinking, wow, the challenges to the oil and gas moat are so severe that I don't need to be putting my money in here because I don't know where this is going to be in 10 years.
So maybe on a more like industry level, you tend to think about it.
I do think about it like that. But ideally, you want to look at stuff that isn't going to change. In other words, are they going to change how much people eat chocolate you know, in the next 30 years, or how much people drink Coca-Cola, or right? Are those things going to radically change over the next 30 years?
But those are two examples. Like Buffett also did say that he really made a mistake by not investing in Amazon years ago. Not at the beginning, not at the beginning, but after it had proven himself, after the company had proven itself to be more than a bookseller online. I think they had probably already started AWS, and that's when Buffett said I should have bought it. And he just, you know, he wasn't sure what it was really worth, basically, is what he said.
Right. That's the catch. Is that these things get bid up but by I the think enthusiasts, seen, right? Seen you want to buy Tesla right now?
Do I know?
Yeah. Why not? No. I mean, it's obviously wonderful and obviously changing the world, and it owns Solar City or whatever. And I mean, how cool would it be to own that, right? So the people who think they're investors who own it because how cool is it? I'm putting my money where my mouth is.
Yeah. That's one way to think about it. Yeah. How cool is it? For sure. I'm sort of intrigued again by the Amazon, like what are we going to need in a few years? And then they go and they do that. And having a company that thinks like that is super interesting to me and exciting.
That is super interesting, super exciting. And I'm just going for more boring stuff. It's just, here's what I want. I want this kind of amazing degree of boredom where if I buy a house across the street to rent out, you know this, right? I've told you this so many times. Is I want to buy it so that it's paying me 10% per year of the purchase price. And then I'm not particularly going to worry about whether real estate's going up or down over the next 4 or 5 years. I don't care. I mean, I may never care because I live in a part of the county that is, as far as I can tell, only going to improve and become more and more valuable as people expand out of Atlanta. It's a really well-run county, and they don't make land like this anymore. So I feel like it's got a huge moat by virtue of its location. And if I can get paid 10% a year, I know that as time goes along, there's this natural, almost gravity of economics that says inflation is going to increase. In fact, the Federal Reserve is intending to increase inflation at 2% a year.
So
I know my rents are going to go up.
Yeah.
Right? So I want that level of comfort and certainty in a business that I own. That's my lodestone. That's my North Star right there. So when I buy a company, I want to feel about it like I feel about that house in terms of the certainty that I have that it'll be more productive, higher rents, more money coming in 10 years than it is today. And today,
totally
I'm buying
agree.
It for a price that reflects 10% a year yield, and I'll take that deal. That's how I want it.
Yeah, 100% agree. And
cool.
I think there's a lot of companies that are looking way into the future that have those kinds of attributes. And I think it's when you're looking at stuff like oil and gas companies, like that might be cheap. I don't know if they are. I don't follow them at all. But maybe they're cheap right now. That's an industry as a whole that I would have. Yeah, like you said, like not really sure what's going to happen to its moat.
Right. You always have to distinguish, you know, maybe cheap for a reason,
right.
In which case it's not cheap.
Right.
You might be paying way too much.
Right.
Right. Okay, good. So there we go.
Okay. Sounds good.
I hope that this, I feel like we were all over the place, and I know that we had a plan for this podcast and it didn't happen. But I thought that was pretty cool. I thought we talked about some cool stuff.
Just because we have an idea doesn't mean we need to go with the idea.
That's right. That's right. So you guys, shoot us some more questions. We love the questions, and we'll try to get to more of them and more of them and more of them. Fire us a question. Keep it relatively short so we can play the whole tape, and then we'll try to get you on the air.
Sounds good.
Until
thanks,
then,
everybody.
Time
bye.
To play. See ya. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.